Well, good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for February 22nd, 2015. Koyo Kubosi here. So very glad you joined us. I was thinking about talking about something this morning. And then I changed my mind. I got Live Dharma Sunday all set to go on the computer on Blog Talk Radio. And then I set the timer. And I lay down on the couch in the living room. And I was reading. And I came across a couple of articles that I wanted to mention instead of what my planned remarks. One was, there's an article about February 19th is the Day of Remembrance. Now, some of you may not know what this is. It's a Day of Remembrance marked in Fresno. This is, I'm reading the Fresno Bee. That's our local paper. This is to honor Japanese Americans. Their internment, where American citizens were forced into internment camps during World War II. And it tells about some local events that are going on. February 19th is the day that the executive order 90201 was signed by the president, and at that time, FDR. The executive order was that all Japanese Americans, people of Japanese ancestry on the West Coast, about 120,000 people, to be forced into these internment camps. The FBI and General DeWitt of the U.S. Army was in charge. And they posted notices, and FBI in the sense of they made lists of all the people, the leaders. They had to, church leaders, whoever, and then they posted these notices, public notices about on this particular day, everybody, you better come to this assembly center and so forth. They had lists of people. I have some of these posters, cardboard posters. They're pretty, good size. And I framed a couple of them and gave one each to our sons. I said, you don't remember. You didn't experience these things, but it's part of your heritage. And it describes where, you can only bring what you can carry, and so it was very short notice too, particularly young adults, their lives when they were planning for their future. Maybe some were in college, maybe some had just started careers. But I think the biggest thing was the uncertainty, because all the camps were located in deserted, wild places in Wyoming, Arizona. And not knowing how long you're going to be there, what's going on. And they ended up staying there for about 3 years, perhaps, average time during the war. Then they were allowed. Now, this only affected those on the West Coast, okay? Because they feared that that blood was stronger than these Americans who were, many of them, second generation, meaning that they were born here, they were, and their citizens, that they would do espionage or help the enemy on the West Coast. And tellingly, there were no documented cases of any espionage or anything like that. And of course, redress. This bill was passed 40 years later that gave some reparation to those that were in camp. And President of the United States at that time, George Bush, part of it was a letter of apology to all those that were wrongly interned and so forth. So this day of remembrance is that this event, this dark history, will never be repeated. Because it could be, you know, when Middle Eastern Arabs, American citizens, I'm talking about American citizens, when something like 9/11 occurs and there's war, there's hysteria, there's fear, and you're in public and you see a dark-skinned Middle Eastern person, you have an emotional reaction because 9/11 just occurred. And there were some movements about talk about Muslim American groups, organizations. Better keep an eye on them. Maybe they have some connection to people back home and things like this. You know? So this has to do with human rights. And then the second one is, on February 21st, yesterday, Malcolm X was slain. And they had an observance. His daughter spoke. And right on the site where he was gunned down. I remember he was gunned down in February 85. I heard him speak in 1963. On the Berkeley campus at the University of California when I was a student, and in the Sproul Hall plaza there, lunchtime, I don't know who sponsored the speakers, but he spoke, and, you know, people walking around a crowded plaza and eating bag lunch and whatever, and I remember hearing his strong voice. I just remember, you know, his famous black pride type of statements of, you want your coffee strong, you take it black. You know, nature, black is dominant, okay, over white in nature in terms of your genes and so forth. Biology and nature knows, and he's trying to instill a sense of black pride. The daughter says that she was pleased at this particular site where they were at for the anniversary observance is now a place for people to get a sense of empowerment. What the last paragraph, last sentence says, one of the great things about Malcolm is that he redefined the civil rights movement to include a human rights agenda. Human rights, you know, it was said that he was a young man who gave all that he possibly could, okay, in terms of, he was only 39 when he was shot down. He had, I guess, the Nation of Islam, three of those members were convicted, okay, because he had separated himself from the Nation of Islam about a year earlier before he was shot. But this human rights agenda, meaning whole civil rights movement, was about people, you know? And I think this is, people are more important than ideas, than isms, than labels, you know, people. It's a lot of issues. We should see them as human issues and not religious issues. Sometimes you think about, there's a complex issue, I think, of individuals versus groups, of group concerns. And we see this played out in a lot of ways. It behooves us to give us some thought to that. You know? It's a, yeah, how about free speech? Yeah, but you cannot yell fire in a crowded theater, right? Or things like this. your individual rights stop when they intrude on some other important rights of others. I remember there was an interesting story about someone who was giving the example of, so we're all on the same boat. It's a wooden boat. We're all on the same ship, and everybody has a seat. And one passenger mistakenly, representing individual rights, is starting to dig a hole under his seat with a knife. And people are getting all upset, getting concerned. And he says, hey, I paid for this seat. This is my seat. I could do anything I want here. And he's digging a hole in the bottom of the boat. The idea of, I think sometimes that example has to do with the spaceship Earth. We're all, our actions affect everybody. And sometimes it's in the cause of ecology that these issues are brought up, but human rights, and it spills over into religious matters. And in terms of our topic of interdependency being one of the major teachings in Buddhism, better learn how to get along with others. When we strive on our spiritual journeys and for genuine inner peace, that always means harmony with others. Well, okay, I better get off my soapbox. We have today to give us a guest Dharma Glimpse, Morris Secchio of Florida, and he was part of the Lay Minister LM3 group back in 2010. He was inducted and graduated from the Brighton Center's Lay Ministry Study Program. Already 5 years. Wow, almost 5 years. Hard to believe. But he is a past president of the Trailblazers, which is the resource group of Brighton Lay Ministries. So without further ado, Morris Secchio Sensei.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Reverend Kobose, for having me with you on Live Dharma Sunday today. I give a lot of talks at Unitarian Universalist churches, and almost all of them start their services by lighting a chalice on the altar. Chalice is the symbol of Unitarian Universalism, and it occurred to me one morning while I was speaking at a Vietnamese Buddhist monastery that the chalice is a pretty good metaphor for Buddhist practice, too. A chalice typically consists of a round-bottom cup or goblet-like container, which is attached to a sturdy base. Both of those elements are necessary. If you just had the cup, you could pour water into it, but you'd end up with a mess. The cup would fall over and it would just go everywhere. In order for the cup to hold its contents, you need that base. Without the foundation, the cup is useless. Obviously, the base wouldn't be worth a whole lot by itself either. You could have a very decorative base, but on its own, you still have nothing that will hold water. There's another component, too. This one might be a little bit less obvious, but it's very important, and that's the space inside the cup. The cup itself is just the container for the space, really. Without the space, there's no place for the liquid to go. Our chalice of spiritual practice has these same elements, a base, which is made up of knowledge and understanding, and a cup made from practice. And that creates a space that we can fill with wisdom. Without a basic understanding of the main teachings, then meditation, chanting, making offerings, even taking the precepts, don't really have all that much significance. You don't have to know everything, but you have to know enough to give your spiritual practice a firm foundation. On the other hand, we can get really caught up in learning about Buddhism, learning scriptures, memorizing lineages, learning Japanese or Pali or Sanskrit terminology, and so on, but never get around to practicing. Knowledge by itself is not the Dharma. To know about a thing is not the same as knowing the thing. There's a Zen saying that the finger pointing to the moon is not the moon. If we're not trying to live this knowledge and understanding, we can't experience the Dharma for ourselves. Once you have the foundation of knowledge and the cup of practice, then there's a space in which wisdom can settle. I like to call that space faith. In Buddhism, faith arises out of that foundation of understanding and is shaped by practice. Faith becomes the open space into which wisdom can flow. Sometimes we might find that we know a lot and we practice a lot, but our hearts are full of preconceptions and prejudices. If our space is already full, we need to let go of those things to make room for wisdom to flow into that space that we've created with our knowledge and practice. As you do this, by the way, you find room for more and more wisdom. This chalice we're building is kind of magical. The more wisdom we have, the bigger our foundation of knowledge grows, the more refined our practice becomes, so our reservoir of wisdom gets larger and larger. Well, thank you very much for your attention, and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Okay, thank you very much. As I listen, I like these kind of metaphors. You know, we talk about a foundation. I'm reminded of my father, the late Reverend Guillaume Kubose. When I graduated elementary school in Chicago, they don't have junior high. You go from kindergarten to eighth grade in elementary school, and then you go 4 years of high school. So after the eighth grade, we have our elementary school graduation. And I happened to be chosen as the student president and had to give some remarks. And my father was chosen to be the guest speaker, commencement speaker, you might say. And I remember that day, and I remember his talk. And he talked about very nice. I was impressed with his story about a man who was having a building built, and because he wanted a penthouse. So, I'm going to live in a penthouse. And so he commissioned the contractors, and they were digging the foundation, and the man came by and said, "Hey, how come you guys are digging down into the ground? I wanted a living space up high. How come you're not building that? You're doing the opposite. You're building on digging down." Well, of course, this is a metaphor. The example given was that, no, you see, in order to build that a structure that's very sturdy so that we can go up high, you have to have a sturdy foundation. And of course, the moral here is you get a good education, you got a good foundation for your life, and this kind of a metaphor could be applied in many ways. Indeed, as Morris Sekyo Sensei mentioned, for spiritual practice too. We need the basics, and then we need to keep going. We shouldn't poo-paw knowledge, knowing about the history and basic teachings. It's when we mistake the pointing finger for the moon itself, for wisdom, the difference between knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom is always backed by practice or by personal experience. Doesn't necessarily have to be the kind of sectarian practices, stereotype practices, but personal experiences, life experiences, and awareness of how they relate to the teachings. Kinds of karmic influences. Karmic means cause and effect. You experience certain things, you do certain things, and certain things happen. This is human life, really. And when they're of a religious or spiritual nature, they sort of start to add up. By add up, I mean they could become part of your background, your outlook, your perspective, your attitude, your philosophy of life. Part of you. Called faith. It's the way you look at things. And you And it's because of that that you bring it to any particular given present moment. And that's why you experience that present moment in a certain kind of way. Yes, indeed. Thanks for joining with us. And that's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going, and you have a very beautiful and wonderful day. Thank you.